Back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. I got a question for you. What if within the next 2 years of society, it's 2018 right now, what if in the next 2 years scientists could prove, not the shitty scientists of the world, but let's say the truth movement scientists come together, we hold summits, and we prove to the world that the Mandela effect is real, but that its cause is merely the collective consciousness of all living beings in this sector of wherever, and that we have merely conceived of everything. And that's why some people see the world flat, and some people see the world round. Some people see all the evidence they need for Lee Harvey Oswald shooting JFK, and some people see all the other people involved. And that the ruling class of this place, which we also perceive, one may or may not exist, because we are told that someone named Lord Rothschild lives in Europe, does this stuff, controls the price of gold, is psychotic, whatever, and he runs the world quite a bit. We hear that story, and then we believe it, and in our brain we pass around images online of what these individuals look like, right? But there really are non-player characters, and they're simply because we conceive of them filling gaps in the storyline, because perhaps what if there's only a few of us? What if there's only a few of us on this entire planet? Whatever shape it might be. Stars? Well, maybe they're just artifacts of the way that our mind processes information. Perhaps it is part of our entity. It's the tendrils of our mind. We're actually living inside of our brain. And all the stars are just the touch points to the edge of our proverbial skull. And we're all inside. But what would you do, or what would we do? First question must be presented on a personal level, of course. If they simply could prove it. Through their little thought experiments, right? I don't know what episode's coming that's going to reveal this, but I had a friend of mine. They couldn't get the mouse to work on their, or their, you know, the USB connection to the keyboard to work on their iMac. They had a major deadline. They called me up, help, help, help. And I said, well, I've already helped you once, and we swapped the keyboard. It's not the keyboard's fault. You've tried, wiggling it in the port, and that seems to work. But then if you, which means that port should be bad, but if you move it to other ports, it still has the same problem, so I don't know what the hell the problem is. Just keep doing it. And then I couldn't get it to work on the phone. And finally I just said, look, remember I was over there the other day and you got it to work? Yeah. And you were so sure you could get it to work, right? Yeah. Let's go back to that moment. Remember that moment? I was in front of the computer. I was unable to get it to work. You laughed and you reached behind. You said, it's just as simple. Blop, blop, blop. Boom, it worked. Over the phone, they got it to work instantaneously. And it was like this wild epiphany. I could hear the shock in the person's voice on the other side where they were like, God damn it, that's weird. How is that possible? And I said, because we control the universe, we manifest it. We're just not told that that's the way it works. Now, there was a movie called The Secret, which kind of talked all about this. You manifest your reality. But what they're not able to do in that, or didn't choose to do, was to prove it to you.
Right.
But now, how would it change your life? How would it change your life if they could prove it to you? Well, for those of you who are happy with your life, I think it's going to be very incidental. You know? Maybe not very incidental, but you'll be kind of like, oh, wow, neat. Let's go out to the beach and let's continue to be happy. For those of you having a crappy life, you're in that valley in life, right? And you need to bounce back out. Or you've just sort of felt like, well, I've always been sick. I've always been poor. I've always been the butt of people's jokes. For that kind of person, it is an escape pod. Because now, if they could prove it to themselves and attend these conferences and read the materials online and meet people and do little experiments and prove to themselves that we control absolutely everything that exists, the laws of physics are simply our consensus on how things work, right? For the person suffering, they're like, oh my God, I'm getting the hell out of Dodge. I am not going to be one that suffers. Now, the funny thing is that there is this movement slowly maturing online, which one of our listeners is talking to me about. And, I just coincidentally did an episode where, I could probably make a whole episode on this particular subject, but it's hard to go on for an hour and keep everyone interested in it. So I'll embed it again inside this episode, which is that there might be non-player characters in our universe. For those of you who don't play video games, what this means is that people like Obama aren't really human beings. They don't have souls, which is why they're capable of doing the things that they do. They are there to provide an antagonist to our protagonist journey in this simulation. You know, there's a movie, Total Recall, that came out in 1988 with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the premise of the story is that I have a jackhammer going down the street here. He's a jackhammer guy. He literally pounds rocks all day long, hates his life, hates his job, although he has a really hot wife, and he wants more, and he keeps dreaming about being on Mars, and so he goes to this vacation center called Total Recall, which is that they implant in your brain the vacation that you wish you had. Okay. However, at the last second, they upsell him on an idea that is to go on some super agent where instead of being himself, he gets to be someone else. And the idea is he's going to lay back in this machine. They're going to put this vacation in his memory that he is not only on Mars, but he's a secret agent. He gets a girl and he saves the world. And coincidentally, he ends up becoming that person. And it's so convincing to us that we're not sure whether or not he went on vacation or whether or not he is actually this Dennis Quaid character. I think that's his name. The clue in the movie is that the nerd, before putting in the memory stick to give him the trip, he goes, oh, blue sky on Mars. I've never seen this one before. Everybody misses that line, and that's the key as to what really went on. But in that scenario, he would have gone to Mars. Well, he did go to Mars in this fictional movie, and there obviously are all these bad guys after him. Well, he is the only consciousness in this story that is real, and everyone else is fake. And I think that the whole notion of this NPC model that marries very well with what I'm going to make the theme of this particular episode is that we see inconceivably evil people. They don't behave normally. Their scripts are pretty trite, right? When have you ever seen Hillary Clinton ever speak in anything but the most brainless, trite drivel? Never. You have never heard that woman speak intelligently with any original thought. She is a fucking Westworld, you know, runoff kind of person that, you know, it's like when you're drinking a Coke and at the end, you know, or the beer and there's that spibble at the end that you don't want to even drink yourself. That's what she is. It's unbelievable. And there's a shit ton of them, right? It's amazing that Westworld came out when it did, because there's all this metaphorical, interesting things between that simulation world and what we live in. The hosts, right? The robots that provide all of the antagonistic and protagonistic, sometimes, roles within a storyline to draw out of you your true essence as to what you really are as a person, right? That's the whole initial benefit of Westworld. It helps you find who you are. I think that's fascinating. When left to your own devices, who could you be but yourself when you're not being observed by anyone and you don't have to worry about repercussions of anything that you do? You, I think, would typically go through a very chaotic stage of just running around and doing anything. I mean, you know, if you took someone who had been 20 years inside corporate America, they work downtown New York, and they are saddled with bills and relationship responsibilities and parental responsibilities, and you just put them in a simulation and you said, you're free. Do anything that you want. You can't kill yourself. There's no one there to hurt. You can't kill anyone else. Here's New York. Go. What time of day do you want it to be? Okay. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. 75 degrees. Sun's perfect. Go. I don't know. Would they run around breaking windows? Take a car? Take some Ferrari parked downtown in Manhattan? Drive it around like crazy and spin out and crash into things? And who knows? I think there'd be this chaotic moment of doing absolutely anything, and then I think there'd be this huge calm because they just break themselves like a black stallion. Black stallions are really, really, really hard to break because they are their own horse, and I mean they make you earn it. Then they're loyal as could be, right? So the reason why I bring this up in this particular episode, and I brought it up a little bit in the Law of Attraction episode, is that it makes sense. You know, scientists that want to discover something new and something profound, they have a couple choices, okay? You can pull the thread out of a sweater and follow each follicle up into the sweater slowly but surely, right? That's what your left brain scientist will do. But your right brain Gnostic scientist will simply learn a tremendous amount about the connections of the universe as discovered by previous man. They are able to decipher what seems to make no sense at all. And then they sit, cross their legs, go into a lotus position, and listen to the universe. I don't mean that literally, but hey, it probably wouldn't hurt. And you listen to the universe. And you just let, instead of consciously trying to hang on to the anal retentive rules about how everything works in the universe, you are able to let it meld together. Now that I think an ethereal wins, and I would say in the last probably even just 8 months, I've really started to remodel the entire planet and all existence inside of this ethereal model. And my brain is kind of doing the Tesla thing where it's, as I look at something, I am seeing the swirling nature of its mass in three-dimensional space. And I'm just letting things coalesce in my brain. And then there's the life force that goes in between these things, right? And it is starting to make the universe one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. But what that ends up doing is once you, again, you can take material objects and make them exist through all these ethereal currents, and then you overlay inside of that the blood supply, which is the life consciousness that we are. You have a different marriage, a different relationship between everything in the universe. And now when I look at the Mandela effect, it's starting to mean something completely different. You know, I reference from time to time the movie Forbidden Planet from 1956 with Leslie Nielsen and company. And the reason why that movie always comes back to me, especially when talking about the world sort of being a collective consciousness simulation. And I'll tell you why there's a bit of a problem with this in my brain that I'm still trying to resolve, I guess, is that in the movie Forbidden Planet, which every human being on Earth should say they have seen more than once, it's got stuff for chicks too, is that they found a planet that was inhabited by a race called the Krill. And the Krill was a planet, was a race that had actually built a machine that allowed their consciousness to go into freeform, where they were able to lose all their instrumentalities, meaning their bodies, and they were able to live in their consciousness. And then using this machine, their consciousness would manifest whatever reality they wanted. So if they wanted to be a tiger one day, they'd be a tiger. If they wanted to be a cloud, they could be a cloud. But immediately they realized that their subconscious, the id, Freudian metaphors, right? That they weren't mature enough to turn that machine on. Meaning when they turned it on, they had hatred still deep in their soul. And so as the id was exposed to infinite power to manifest itself into the world, they ate each other up and destroyed each other. So no sooner did they turn the machine on that the whole race simply disappeared in a big violent explosion of subconsciousness. Well, the writers of that script, whom I have no familiarity with whatsoever, were beyond brilliant. Beyond brilliant, because here we are sitting in 2018. Many years later, over 65 years later. And this is sort of the adversarial role against the theory that we actually do hold this whole thing together. Because man isn't at the level of this. And yet it would seem that somehow we are able to influence it. There are experiments in quantum physics where a light wave observed by a man, human, changes its behavior from a light wave that is not observed. It's a mind fuck, trust me, yeah. And you just read this, I read this in the late 70s, early 80s, and you're like, what? Heck yeah, it just happens, we're not sure why. The Holographic Universe book, the first third or fourth of the book, sorry, third to 50% of the book, talks about experiment after experiment where machines observed by man change behavior. I've talked about this several times. But now, the point of this episode is to say, what if we proved, I mean, we actually already have, to be honest, but what if we proved it in a much more coarse way? I'll give you another example. Evolution. Obviously, we could be created by aliens or God, and evolution could still be a part of the everyday life. You know, you evolve. You evolve from a child to an adult. That much we know. Couples that hang out together really early end up looking like each other. And I don't just mean they wear the same blue top and white bottoms. They start looking like each other. It's weird. They harmonize their very genetics. I got two or three friends like this. They used to look like someone different from each other, and then they dated really early. And then it's like they look like each other. They look like brother and sister, basically. But they tell us that, you know, in your lifetime, there'll be no evolution in any creature's lifetime. They'll never evolve from their core genetic core. There are protein patterns that are dictating how the DNA grows to anything new that you can observe. And I think that's bullshit. I think we see it happen in a person's lifetime sometimes. You're not going to grow a third arm like Zaphod Beeblebrox, but I think we evolve to the extent that we use our minds. We become completely different human beings. Some of you can really remember your past. You can remember being in your teenage years, and now you're above 40, let's say. And you look back as to who you were at 12, 14, 15 years old, maybe even 18. And you go, my God, I am so completely a different human being. My spirit is different. How I identify myself is completely different. My confidence level is different. My clothes are different. What kind of food I like is totally different. We all know that the second that you believe you can do something is the second you have a chance of being able to do it. So again, I'll pose the question again and again. What if we as a society could prove that this world is based on some collective consciousness? Now, the fragility of man's consciousness would almost completely contradict my notion, which is to say, man isn't stable enough as a human being. Our consciousness is too chaotic and too self-centered or fragile, like a bunch of tissue paper in a windstorm, to be able to hold that palm tree over there in place, this house in place, the computer electronics in place. So what could possibly be the anchor of consciousness that would take care of 99.9999%, still leaving open that fraction of a percent for us to change Luke, I'm your father, to know I'm your father. Again, you know, I just watched a video not more than 48 hours ago where Mark Hamill, looks like he's 20 years ago, somewhere in the 90s, was on some game show. And they asked him to repeat the line, Luke, I'm your father. And he does it on TV. Apparently, the USS Minnow, which is the ship from Gilligan's Island, was initially spelled with two N's, and now it's spelled with one N. And there's interviews with people that are involved in production, historians, that say, of course, they spelled it with two N's. Of course, they spelled it with two N's, you know. And why it's this weird stuff, I don't know, right? Luke, I'm your father. Well, I could understand the absolute vortex of consciousness on that one line, because it is a very profound line in all of filmmaking. I don't know of another line besides perhaps, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn, from Gone with the Wind. And that's just a dirty word. That's why that was popular. But no, I'm your father, or Luke, I'm your father. Man, that is a pivotal moment in everyone's life who was in the pocket in 1980, right? Okay. But what could hold this whole thing together, right? Well, I think it sort of comes down to man's definition of life. What do we accept as life? We only accept things that are like us. Again, I got a crappy old coffee table painted bright green, especially more forest green nowadays, but that is not life anymore to me. It was made out of living wood at one point. Man cut it up and made it into this shape, and there it is. But it doesn't talk to me. It doesn't walk around. And so for me, it's dead to me. It provides a service, which I appreciate, but it's not alive. But the question is Earth alive? Isn't it weird that the cycle of life here on Earth, outside of our souls, but especially for a scientist, this should be even tougher to digest, okay? That the Earth is providing all of the atomic resources for man to exist, right? Dust to dust, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. And then all of a sudden, from the Earth, from its fruit and its vegetables, come life. This random fucking, you know, idea that something can come from nothing. I love that idea because it's so profoundly fucking ignorant, right? Stupidity could be utterly fascinating, right? How can you believe that shit? It's amazing that the cognitive dissonance in your mind is so profound that you can believe complete and utter horseshit. It's amazing, right? But what if the Earth is completely and utterly alive? It's pretty hard to say the vacuum of space would be alive, because what's there to be alive? Well, it's only a vacuum in NASA's eyes, right? At least the above board, you know, crap science version of it, right? Now, internally, they are trying to figure out how to get through this vacuum of space because it's so fucking radioactive that everybody would die sitting in a capsule with no contact with the Van Allen belts, with no contacts from a solar flare. Ambient radiation from a sun will kill your ass. And you could be 3 solar systems away from our universe, and you're still going to die fairly rapidly. The one reason that I think that a lot of us believe in a God outside of any religious paradigm or even scientific paradigm is merely that the rules that hold us together seem to be working really, really well. But now let me throw this at you. How many of you think about your pancreas working? How many of you think about your heart working? Or all the digestive system stuff working? Do you know when you have to go to the bathroom? Way before you have to go to the bathroom. Okay, it's 10 o'clock in the morning. I know I'm going to have to go to the bathroom at 12:13 today, and then I'm going to have to go to the bathroom again at 4:52. No, you don't. So within the human body, we have an autonomic system, which I will refer to incorrectly at times as autotomic, autonomic system that runs the, I don't know, what, 99% of our entire body? We don't have to do anything, and it's completely automated. And here we are fussing with this however many percent that we have control of in our mind. And boy, are we so preoccupied with our 3% or whatever the fuck it is, right? Hell, even if you add up to 10% of your brain's power, it's still not the majority of what your body's doing. Okay. So, just like when we parsed thought in the observed reality episode, let's parse function. Okay. We know that the majority of what we are is automated. It is automated through the relationship of protein patterns that are found in your chromosomes. 50% of your chromosome is protein patterns. They're telling the other 50% of your chromosomes, DNA, how to grow. It's this beautiful atomic schematic that is essentially like the most complex IKEA furniture that could ever be built, which is us. It is then imbued with a consciousness that rides on top of it or through it. And then you celebrate man. So, let me rewind now. Given that knowledge of an automated operating system within the human construct that you have already enjoyed to get to this point of listening to me, perhaps that is imbued or capable of maintaining an imprint of consciousness of reality, 3-space reality with 5-sense body, and that sort of the subsystem that is running our body is all working together to create this reality. Because it's all automated. Yeah, let me play devil's advocate over and over and over. Virtually no one in the world has been in this backyard. The percentage of people that have been in this backyard is absolutely next to infinitely small nothingness. I mean, seriously, if I were to guess how many people have stood in this backyard with all the previous owners, their kids, their friends, barbecues, I think a fairly high number would be 50. I think a gigantic number would be 100. But I'm willing to bet it's closer to 30 to 50 people. I personally, in 15 years, have been responsible for maybe, I don't know, 10 people been in this backyard. So how does this backyard exist? If everyone has to think about it to keep it in existence, then how does it exist? Okay. Well, let me get you hip to some programming techniques that are more prevalent today than they ever were. Back in the day when we made video games, an artist, eventually, once the programmer stopped drawing video games, an artist had to draw the game. And if they didn't draw it, it didn't exist. And that worked for the majority of the years that we have had in video games to date. But once video game consoles got to 1080p, which was considered 4K back in the day, right? About 2003 or so. They started to realize that the resolution on the screens, plus 16:9 aspect ratio of flat monitors, was creating so much viewport into the world that drawing it all by hand was extremely expensive, infinitely prohibitable to any budget that you might have for a video game. And so right off the bat, video games started to look silly. Like, the cities looked too clean, and they didn't have the ability to tell the stories of post-apocalyptic worlds because there was no method to really afford to make it look dirty. And so the coders got real smart, and they said, you know, we're going to have to do it. We're going to have to procedurally generate this world, meaning we're going to create an engine that's going to follow a script, and it's going to essentially say, this is the general geometry of New York City. This is what we consider to be the ground. This is a building. This is the first story of a building, which has a lot of different properties than the 50th story, right? Because trash will go up against the bottom of the first story of a building. And so we started procedurally generating worlds. And now an artist can create an aluminum can that's squashed and create it four or five different ways and put it into the system and go, there, you got five cans. Have at it. The coders would then take those cans and orient them in a million different XYZ orientations to make sure it never quite looks in your mind exactly the same. There's no patterns in the world. In memory, it's just one can, so it's pretty affordable to the game console. It could generate, you know, randomly every single time you play the game. This happens all the time today. All right. How many times have you played a video game where the world is all shrouded in darkness, and it only reveals itself as you walk into the darkness? And some of these video games are randomly generating the world as you de-shroud the world. So what if my consensus of what this backyard looks like was simply built out of the first person that conquered this land? The first algorithm of this land was it was farmland. It's in Orange County. They used to grow oranges here like crazy. Okay? And then very slowly over time, it began to get manicured by land developers who wanted to build neighborhoods. And so they consciously added to the terrain. They put it in the archive of reality for the rest of us to mirror. Those of you who have mirrored hard drives on your computer, you know all about this. So perhaps we're constructing reality as we discover it. But now, let's bring science back into it. Real science. With this theory I'm presenting, there's a lot of problems that we'd have to resolve. What if we had two groups that have never met each other, and they've both built machines that can dig into the center of the Earth? We have an unobtainium hull that is impenetrable to any temperatures that are conceivable in the universe. It could be at the center of an atomic explosion, and it's completely fine. And they're going to drill to the center of the Earth at the exact same time. One's going to be drilling through clay, and one's going to be drilling through granite rock. Both machines are infinitely capable of accomplishing the task. But now, the machine is going to be discovering what the inside of the Earth is actually made out of at the exact same time. For some ludicrous way, we have method, we have them both at the same sea level. They're both going to penetrate the Earth at the exact same time. And if man is merely manifesting reality, what's going to be at the center? What if one person finds unicorn farts and the other person finds plasma energy? Because the groups are completely different cultural groups with different indoctrinated religions, whether they be religious or scientific. They have a completely different philosophy about what the universe is made out of. Again, one of them thinks it's made of rainbow sherbet, and the other one thinks it's made out of nickel alloy. What's going to happen? We know how it works. I think. Now, geologists will be the first people to tell you that the Earth is covered in a bunch of different sedimentary rocks. Some areas it's clay. It's the most gorgeous clay you've ever seen. Again, other parts of the world, it's the White Cliffs of Dover. It's coral rock. Some people have deserts. Some people have forests. Wouldn't it be fascinating if this varying strata in the Earth's surface is merely made out of the cultural differences of man as man manifests the existence of the Earth's surface? It starts to get really fascinating, doesn't it? We know that people look genetically similar in different areas of the world. Asian people look different than Indian people, different than Caucasian people, than African people, than Native American people, the Latin hybrids of South America. But once we establish that we exist, an Aborigine could have a child with an Asian, and because we know what an Aborigine looks like, we know what an Asian looks like, our brains can average the frequencies together, and we have a hybrid of the two. One thing I've always been fascinated about is the process by which we either look like our mothers, our fathers, or both. I'm always studying in my mind, okay, that it's the anomalies that are very interesting. When you have a bunch of children with someone and they all look like the mom, or they all look like the dad. And for me, what I end up doing is I look at the personalities of the two. And I'll say to myself, well, which one of the two are more dominant in personality? And in a lot of cases, and I want to almost say all cases that I have personally investigated, if the two are sharing the marriage beautifully, 50-50, at least at the time of birth, the child is a beautiful hybrid, 50-50. But if one is really owns the family, they wear the pants in the family, as they say, it's amazing how the kids will all start looking like that adult, whichever one it is. The couples that end up looking like each other are usually defined as one very interesting thing, and it's that they are madly in love. Madly in love. They could be married 80 years, and they simply can't get enough of each other. It's pretty cool when that happens. Let me ask you another question. Based on the principle that perhaps we do manifest this reality, in relationship with perhaps other levels of consciousness that we do not acknowledge, like planet Earth being alive as well. It doesn't have to be alive for us to manifest this, like I told you. Would you ever want that control? Would you fear messing it up? I don't want control of that stuff, right? If I read a book about black holes, I don't want my backyard to turn into one, right? Just because I'm manifesting its existence, right? You ever talk to someone who's ridiculously religious and they got fucking rules for everything and there's not a goddamn mystery in the Bible, they've got it all figured out? I mean, they've got incredibly ridiculous fucking rules figured out. They take one translation of the Bible and goddamn it, it's every word is verbatim, and you know, obviously it's like four or five translations away from whatever Titus Flavius disciple that wrote the damn thing. But they got it all figured out. And after you get done talking to them, you're like, they're going to go where they think they're going to go. You just have this instinctual feeling in your chest. You're like, well, I'm not going to your pearly gates fucking heaven. I'm not standing in line with some Peter with some goddamn book. And I'm sure as fuck not going to hell, you know, for some finite crime I might have committed on Earth. I'm not going to go to some infinite fucking prison. Because that's not the way the universe works. You just know. You're not sure exactly what's after this world, but you know that's bullshit. You just know, right? But you get the sense, I get the sense, that these religious people, absurdly religious people, are going to go right where the fuck they think they're going to go. And talk about the next lesson in their existence, right? The penalty for being so absurdly obsessed with figuring out some religious paradigm written by man, for man, making God look like a man, you know, it's just pathetic. They're going to go exactly where they think they're going to go. Now, there's also the question of whether or not there's a beginning to the universe at all. Or is it simply an is? The plural of the imaginary number, is, is. At one point, conceiving of something that is that has no beginning, given that we have a beginning, middle, and end as humans, right? It hurts the brain for a little bit. Well, yeah, God, you know, everything has to have a beginning, right? What sense does it make that anything could simply just exist? I'm going to offer up in this late juncture in this particular show's existence that perhaps the is the only thing that really makes sense, as illogical it is to our cycle of life. If there is an is, then there's the paradigm for the notion that everything that could ever exist does exist. Given that there's probably no such thing as time, in its sense that man manifests it, right? That we have a timeline and that there's past time happening at the same time future time's happening, but it's actually not in the presence of us because we're in the now time, and that the only road that we can take is forward. That is a paradox right in front of your face. It doesn't make any sense. Just describing time makes no sense. The illusion of time is obviously given to us because we have recollection of previous states that we have been in, right? What happens when you go to an amusement park, like Disneyland? Well, you park your car, take the tram, you buy the ticket, go in the front door, and then there's rides right inside the front door, and then there's rides all the way to back of every single corner of everything. Okay, so if you measure time or give time a perspective of your trip into an amusement park, you would have to say that time moving forward is always going on a new ride. You created some real wild river path through the entire park, so you never ride the same ride twice. But you know there's a time you have to leave. And you backtrack through your previous time. You see the gate that you walk through. Now it's dark. No one's taking tickets anymore. And there's just someone waving one of those little, you know, magic wands. Get out. Go back home. And it's almost as if you're seeing the carcass of time. That used to work. That booth used to work. There used to be someone standing there ripping tickets or whatever. Now the turnstiles are all open and free. And they only go one direction. Moving forward in time is very interesting as it relates to this image of the universe. Why not stay in a stagnant state the entire time you are in existence? And I think the Buddhists have helped us figure that out. Nirvana is hell as well as it's heaven. A stateless being that is in some form of euphoria constantly. As I always reference in this show, the Q Continuum from Star Trek. You do not want to stay the same being all the time for any length of time. I don't think you'd want to be in your body today on Earth stagnated, right? You wake up in bed. Oh, you've had a great night's sleep. Your dreams are utterly phenomenal. But now I come in and I wave a magic wand and you're in literally a paralysis mode where you can't move your body. But you can use your brain and you're just sitting there in bed. The sun never moves. No one ever comes to visit you. You are stuck in bed. There's no bed sores, but you're not accomplishing anything in your day. The life cycle that you have enjoyed your entire existence has been assassinated. And that's most Christians' beliefs about heaven, is an assassinated existence. So it would seem that however the universe was created, either by us or by some divine being, or beings, the one thing they understood was that things have to change, otherwise we live in hell. So thank your lucky stars. For those of you in some sort of suicidal thought process, hopefully you just randomly bump into this episode, but think about it. The one piece of advice any one of us can give you who have been absolutely down and out to a level of absolute self-destruction is that tomorrow does not equal the past. And that's the beautiful thing. You will always dig yourself out of the worst situation that you're in. There's people who have been sentenced to life sentences in prison. They will never see anything other than the prison. And they get in there and they think their life is over. And for a while it feels that way. But if you watch the shows where they interview these individuals over and over, dozens and dozens of them, they found a way to shrink their universe to the walls of the prison. Hopefully they're not completely in solitary confinement, but even if they are in solitary confinement, that little tiny cell is their world, and they figure out a way to create microcosms of entertainment. And things change. There's parole hearings sometimes. Maybe there's a little bit of leniency. You don't have to stay in solitary confinement for absolutely forever. You're not on death row. Going to get out a little bit more. Hell, maybe the whole world changes and we don't put anybody in prison anymore because we have some Clockwork Orange rehabilitation. You never know. People go in violent and they calm down. Some people go in barely a criminal and they turn into monsters and then they calm down. I hope that you can see that one of the patterns that I use on this show really has to do with that catchphrase, which is, as it is above, so too it is below. I'm pounding that in my brain all the time. When we want to discover something about ourselves, we must look out to the universe and find themes, functional themes and psychological themes that mirror our own existence. And as you've seen in this show, hopefully in this particular episode, they're everywhere. They're absolutely everywhere. One of the values that I am endeavoring to bring you is that if your life is really, really busy and you don't have the time to sit around and think like the old Greek philosophers and scientists of yesteryear who sat on the steps of the universities and just simply thought, who sat across from each other at some lunch in Athens or wherever, where they shared ideas, and they were off thinking for 2 or 3 months about one subject, and the other one was thinking about a very similar subject, but they're coming at it from a completely different angle. And then they sit down, and they share a plate of dates or whatever, and in between their visits to the bathroom, they shared what they had discovered. Perhaps they found some unifying principles between their different approaches. Perhaps at times they bounced off each other and said, you know, you're full of shit. Well, no, you're full of shit. I'll see you in a week. Okay. And the other time they said, man, that's fascinating. Isn't it interesting how I think we're going towards the same means to an end, you know? We're coming to the same conclusions. And there's anomalies in both their theories, but once they mix them together, there's this beautiful unity. This show is trying to create that sort of atmosphere for you if you're extremely busy, or if you have a lot of time to think about things from time to time. You're able to pull some of these concepts into your own thinking. The comment section in every video is your chance to share back what you have discovered. One of the fundamental principles of being in existence is to gain control over your environment. Every insect does it. Every animal does it. They want control. Especially those that build shelters. Try to feed a hungry dog and then reach for the food. They will defend their food because they want control over their appetite. They don't like feeling hungry. And they'll bite your hand off if you go for it, right? For any of you who have dabbled in, say, martial arts, for instance, or boxing or something, when you join that regiment, and let's say you didn't bring anything with you, any knowledge with you, you haven't scrapped as a young kid, you're kind of freaked out because you think, well, shit, everyone else there has already been there for longer than me. Even if someone's been there a week, has more control over the fight, how to do it. And so you're rapidly trying to fill your brain with first your defense maneuvers to protect yourself against someone doing you harm. Luckily, most of these places have some rules about killing each other. And then you learned your offensive moves. And now you can start taking control over who gets to push you around, even in a sparring match, right? Camaraderie is usually the third thing that occurs, that once you start to realize, okay, I know what it's like to get hit in the face. I know what it's like to get kicked in the ribs. I know how to defend myself against being kicked in the ribs in a way that is typical and hurts. And I know how to counterstrike when I am struck in some way, because it offsets their body. It puts them in a weak state in most cases. And now I'm going to look for those patterns, and you build up muscle memory for maneuvers and use your peripheral vision instead of your dead-on vision, which is why they always tell you usually to look in the chest of a human being during a fight, because your peripheral vision is way faster than your front frustum of vision. And things just start to happen. How many times has someone thrown like a sock at your face and you flinch, even though the sock could hit you completely in the face and you'd be okay? Because your body has all this autonomic programming to protect you, especially protecting the eyes, right? Because back in the day, we didn't have hospitals, and when you cut yourself, you could bleed out, you could get infections, and you would die. The reason I mention that is that it is a metaphor of example for how we live our normal lives outside of any confrontation. A lot of times people will say, wise people will say, well, you have to pick your battles. It's a very wise statement, and the statement, what it really means is, there's only so much time in the day. There's only so many resources you have. And so you got to pick your battles carefully. We don't really want to focus on the actual confrontation itself in this conversation. What we want to do is focus on the underpinnings of gaining control such that we can avoid battles. But now, any of you who've ever philosophized and you try to gain perception of your existence, you will know that there has to be a process that you develop around whatever solution you're trying to discover. You just have to. Otherwise, you will run out of time. As I mentioned in several episodes, you know those people that are very high strung. And you might be one of those people right now in your life. And you're like, I'm conscious that I am high strung and I hate it. I want to be relaxed. I want to be cool. I want people to get that vibe from me. You want to walk in a room that is in a big argument, and just your mere existence in the room calms everyone down because of a couple things. One, your overall vibe is not that, and so you start to exude your lower frequency. It's like when someone is very stressed out and they get into a pool of water, one that is not chaotic like a jacuzzi, but one that's like a lake. And you sit on that noodle and you go up to your neck in the water, and you're just chilling with your friends, maybe you're drinking a beer or whatever, you start to have all of the stress of life pulled away from you. And there's an amazing, beautiful thing when you put your head underneath water for any length of time, you start to calm down, because all of your tension's up here in your head. It's where your thoughts are, right? And it just overwhelms you. It's low frequency sine wave of energy within the water is all around you, and it, believe me, it's boss, right? You're inside some gazillion tank lake. It's going to win, and it's a beautiful thing, which is why visiting lakes can be very therapeutic. And if you're doing jet skiing and skiing and doing a bunch of activities, it's quite the opposite, right? But the second thing that will occur when you walk into a room, when you are known for being this sort of calm soul, is in the subconscious or even the consciousness of people in the room who, especially if they know you, they will inadvertently, subconsciously say, okay, he's here, she's here. We can't behave around this person like we are behaving. Part of it's because they say, we don't want to be seen by this person behaving in an immature manner. It's very powerful. Sometimes, I've had this happen to me several times, I'll walk into a room and there's a very intense debate going on. People are just on the edge of being heated, if not already being heated. And some in the room will know me really, really well, or all of them will. And they'll say, oh my God, you're here. We have a debate going on. I believe this, they believe that. Resolve this for us. Make us both feel good It's kind of what they're saying, right? And in most cases, I'm capable of getting in there and listening. And even if I hear someone who I think is, according to my biased opinion, is completely off base, I understand that they're a human being with feelings. And the last thing they want to experience in this room is me confirming that they're wrong, right? Which is not really the case. It's my bias that disagrees. And so I will wordsmith my reply to give everyone credit for thinking, for one, for being passionate about a solution. You know, a very easy one that you'll bump into every once in a while, and I haven't bumped into this for a long time, but it's a good example for this episode, is two or three people arguing over, I was going to say world peace, but let's go after just politics in general. The common denominator for all people, when you put them in a room, even religious people, is that they are, their goal typically, if they're not some Neanderthal hanging on to Sharia law or some bullshit, yeah, we're going to always keep that in the shit house, is that they typically want the world to be a wonderful place. That's what they really want. They just simply disagree about the methodology to get there. Some people will believe that the idealistic definition of socialism is fantastic. We all share the spoils of the world. And of course, theoretically speaking, it works great. But the problem is there's always some absolute corrupted power person at the top, hidden away, and they will manipulate the strings to make sure that they are disproportionately rewarded for being in that position. But the layman people that we run into, right, the normal human beings, and I used to think layman was an insult. In fact, I was proofing a document in the early 90s once, and someone used the word layman's, and they were asking me for edits on the article, and I said, well, I think a layman's is kind of, sort of an insult. And it was just that I was so immature about language that I didn't realize that that actually has no bias, really. It's just saying, look, if you don't know anything about this, this is how it works. And that's all they were saying. So you could acknowledge everyone's desire to make the world a wonderful place and simply say, well, I'm going to acknowledge, and the person who perhaps, let's just use this as an example because I've had this conversation before, but the one about socialism, and you say, look, I understand socialism and the theory of it. On paper, it is beautiful. You are correct. And if we could ever get everyone to think the same way, socialism could be the way the world works. It's sort of the same theory with, we could get rid of all the guns, but if the whole world doesn't do it and gets rid of ballistic missiles and nuclear bombs and everything else that's a weapon, tanks and everything, then it's not going to work. For now, we all have to have a Second Amendment. We all do. All of you European people that are watching, you do have to get back your guns. You do, because we are not remotely mature enough to live in a world without them, in terms of just defending ourselves against tyrannical governments. If you haven't been convinced the EU is a tyrannical body run by the Arab Brotherhood, then you're not paying attention. It's a sad fact. It's a sad fact that there are shadow agencies that believe in genocide and extermination of pretty much everyone in the world that isn't them. They write it on their websites. You can just read it. You don't have to debate it. At least they're being honest with us in their publicized materials. Just like Malcolm X said, I'd rather have a guy tell me he thinks I'm a N-word to my face than someone who's pretending to be my friend when they hate me. But let's go back to the overall theme of this episode, the first comments I made in this episode to wrap it up here, okay? What if we did participate in a very active way in the reality that we have created? What if it is us that manifest the antagonists, the non-player characters, that is our universe? How do we manifest goodness, and how do we retract badness? How do we clean up the mess of people that are long gone, right? What if for 50 years, the baby boomers through all kinds of agendas, the feminist agenda, which again convinced all these women that they didn't have jobs before 1980, before the movie 9 to 5 came out, all women were repressed and beaten and didn't do anything, right? It's ridiculous. Go watch the show, What's My Line? I'm going to do a whole episode on What's My Line. And we will prove, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that women were powerful and amazing forever. Okay. Yes, we needed to vote for the right to vote and bring them into the fold of how society worked. But in terms of women working, it was different, right? How do we make this world a better place? Well, if our consciousness and subconsciousness participates in the creation of reality for us individually and then thus us as a society, right? Getting, you know, from a person in a home to their neighborhood, to the town, to the state, to the country, to the world, then we have to do everything in our power to focus on the emotions that we would love to swim inside of, right? Positivity. It's a feedback loop. It is a feedback loop of our thoughts. The Observed Reality episode is extremely important as a personal primer for you to understand that everything that you see inside your mind is not your thought. And therefore, you do not need to ask for help necessarily in repelling thoughts that you don't believe have anything to do with your reality. You can reject that yourself by yourself. Now, you can ask for help if you like from the universe, and it will provide. It will. But you can own a gun in your house and never think about it. Never think about it. When something happens to you that angers you, you have a choice of how you respond. And I would say that if you respond negatively, and again, some stuff is really bad, okay? If you can't get away from it, it's being forced upon you, then you can choose to deal with it a number of ways. My wisdom that I would like to share with you, that I've obviously taken from others, is try to choose some method by which you don't have to demonize the situation in a way that it manifests even larger. You don't want a negative situation that is at unit 1 and respond to it to the point you augment it to unit 5 out of a 1 through 5 scale. Right? You don't want to go up to a massive level of severity in your life such that you're like, well, it was bad and I just made it worse. Now, we all human beings, we all do this, right? Someone will anger you and you're not ready for it. You had a great day and all of a sudden you come home or you go to work or whatever and you're surprised by something. And it shocks you and it takes time to calm down and cool off. Hopefully you're a wound easy, heal fast kind of person like myself. But sometimes that wound easy can be embarrassing in your responses to others. Most of you have realized that those that cause these problems for you, well, they don't want to take responsibility for it. And again, like Iago and Othello, they don't perceive themselves as being a problem. You have to almost convince them that this is a problem they've created for you. It's great for them. It's not great for you. It hurts you. Hurt you emotionally, perhaps physically, whatever. That's where you have to make decisions about who's in your life, what's in your life, such that you can live a full, beautiful, rich life where you get what you want in life and you get what you need in life. But you're out of this manifestation that is creating negative thoughts for you that then manifest into reality. Even if there is no participation of man in this reality, which I don't believe is the case, but even if it were, just an illusion created by a bunch of bad history, someone misquoted Star Wars, and so even the actors that participated in the creation of the movie for 35 years completely got it wrong. You realize that? It's been 38 years since 38 years. Since Empire Strikes Back happened, and James Earl Jones will still reference Luke, I'm your father. Luke, or Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker, still thinks it's Luke, I'm your father. those are the two individuals who spoke the lines, and it changed. It's pretty hard to say that they would, that we're all just having this sort of bad history moment, right? Well, you know, everyone thought Eli Whitney was a black guy for, 100 years, and recently it's a white guy from Yale. A guy that never picked cotton in his life had the epiphany about how to create a machine to pick cotton, right? It's just hilarious, right? It doesn't make any sense logically. But even if we don't participate, we know that when you're around people who are happy, it's pretty hard to be bummed out. Unless you're envious. But if you ever bump into someone that has something that you want, instead of hating them and being envious, make friends with them. Use all of your skills to make friends with them and figure out, if you can't be friends with them because you never are going to meet them, you like someone who's a celebrity or a business person or whatever, study them. Study how they got where they are today. And you'll find it's a lot of hard work most of the time. Very few people fall uphill to those levels. Sometimes it happens. Some people are in the right place at the right time, but that's like trying to win a lottery by hanging out with the people that won the lottery ticket. It doesn't help you win at all. It's random. Very few of you probably do that. I know you feel me, but sometimes we have to have things repeated to us to remember. If a self-help course worked in the following way, then none of us would have any problems. Let's say that Tony Robbins touched all of us. His techniques simply worked. They worked for me. They made me largely who I am today at some level, some double-digit percentage. Not 50% probably, but hell, wouldn't you take 15% improvement if you could, right? I have no affiliation with that guy whatsoever. I'm not even, today's kind of weird, but we could just listen to self-help lessons, watch a YouTube video, we could read a book, we could listen to audio recordings of these folks telling us how life can be great and how it works. And we'd all be fixed because you only need to hear it one time. We know that's not the case. We were idealistic once as children, and we knew that at 13, if we picked up that guitar and we practiced for 4 years, by 17, we'd be a master at it. By 18, we'd have a career in it. And we probably would not feel like we were working ever again in our lives. But what happens? Why don't you pick up that guitar? Why don't you have that regiment? Or that reward, I should say. Because life happens. It distracts you. Kids with cell phones today, holy shit. If you have a kid who's a Gen Z, a Gen whatever the hell they're going to call it after that, and they're able to create a career, they're able to develop a trade skill, they're able to work in the real world, and they're able to become self-employed at some point, I'm going to say that they have fought more demons than you and I over 40 have ever fought in our existence, unless we self-impose the challenge on ourselves. Because there are so many distractions for kids today. As a parent today, you could look at a kid, even if it's not yours, and simply, especially if it's not yours, I'll probably listen to you a little bit more. And you could say something to the effect of, well, you got a choice, kid. You could spend your whole youth inside that phone, pretending to have friends that you really don't have. Maybe if the kids are into video games, which isn't a big thing now, you could liken that as well. But you can say to that kid, well, you can stay in that if you want. But at 18, you're going to have to figure out what you're going to do with your life. And if you want to go to college and you have no inkling of who you are and what you like in life because you didn't use your teenage years to figure out the trade skill that you're actually interested in, then you may never, ever enjoy a life that is yours. You will work for someone else, and someone else will be the dreamer, and someone else will tell you what to do. And even if it's something wonderful, you might still spite it because it's not your idea. You will feel deep down inside the genetics of your ancestors who did have such opportunities. If you have a family of doctors, you will be frustrated to visit a doctor because you're thinking inside your soul, I should be the one figuring out the solution here. I shouldn't have to pay money to someone else. If your family's full of musicians, you might think, Jesus, I should have been the one writing the song that's on the radio because I hate the shit that's on the radio. And kid, you'd be right. You'd be right. You should have been the doctor. You should have been the scientist. You should have been the musician or whatever. But you jumped inside your telephone and you threw your life away. It's not your fault necessarily. It was given to you as a baby to pacify you so mommy and daddy could watch, you know, the next gory Walking Dead episode. But some of you are aunts and uncles. You are grandparents to really young kids, and you can influence them. You can drop that mad science on them, right? Man, I'll tell you, if you watch every single episode, I have told you about several of the moments when wise men and women looked at me in that way that says, this is a make or break moment, kid. How you interpret what I'm about to say is going to control your destiny. And they don't have to say, listen up. They don't have to say, pay attention, kid. Listen to me, boy, I'm talking to you. They don't have to say that. It's just that moment. And because they're not my parent, I wasn't really a rebellious kid against my parents, but if you know that stupid archetype that goes on all the time. But I listened, and it changed my life. They had a perspective. You can be one of those people. Be cool. Don't be confrontational. Try not to take a shit on someone else in order to make your point. Just lay out the options. You're wise souls. You wouldn't be here if you weren't. Like I say in previous episodes, our genetics are phenomenal. That's how we got to this point. But the ruling class of this world and the sellouts that worship them for a short-term paycheck, they're trying to stifle your genetic line from becoming anything in life. So they all become serfs. They all become slaves. All the time professing they're anything but. Kids don't think anything should be difficult in life at this point. They think everything should just be handed to them on a socialistic platter, which is why certain political parties in the United States of America draw a lot of praise, I would say. That's why they're able to get a single vote, as they're saying, I know we fucked up your entire life. And so socialism is your only way out. By no means is it the only way out. Spread the fruits of your wisdom. Realize that, the youth of this world, and even some of the adults, they will sometimes reject you to your face, but they have heard every word that you've said. And they will keep it in their quiver for when times go bad. And they'll look over their shoulder to make sure you're not watching. And they'll pull your arrow out, lock it, knock it, fire it, and win. And the second that happens, the second they hit the bullseye of life based on something you've said, everything else you've ever told them will go from the storage container in their brain, marked, that son of a bitch who told me how to live my life, it'll be unwrapped, pushed completely to the front, and it will be, we're going to live our life by these rules. We'll study them to make sure they work, but this is our new way. I think that's it. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, that's where you get all the feeds. There's audio, there's video, there's a locked Facebook group, and there's a Patreon page. I am posting Patreon episodes, or these episodes on Patreon, with like a 1 to 3 day preview. I try to give the 7 people on Patreon the chance to see things first. So get in there if you dig it. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over and out.